Welcome to BCMC Pop Culture Man Children.
Oh, is that how you do it?
No, sometimes. Sometimes when I'm feeling silly, I do it. Who cares? You know, this is like episode 400. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I get it. At this point, you can just show up now.
I checked out years ago.
So then why do you still do it?
Nah, I don't check out. Sadly, I put so much effort into this show.
That's all I have.
Bro, look at the note. Every episode, copious notes.
Yeah.
I'll be like, babe, I can't hang out tonight. I got to watch a movie I've seen a million times. I've got to watch Transformers the movie and take notes. And she's like, why do I love
you? I just show up like the fucking athlete that I am. No notes. Well, for this one, I have notes.
When you used to do the Emilio Sparks Experience and I was like third mic guy, that was great. I'd breeze in high as a kite, say some funny things.
You were great. I know. I had to do all the heavy lifting.
I know.
Which is why I really don't like to podcast anymore.
It's work.
Like I
never missed a since we the first episode of PCMC 8 years ago. I've never missed an episode.
And I'm proud of you. I think the only reason why that I left PCMC was because I got extremely busy and I was jet setting and traveling.
You did have a jet setting time.
Yeah, for a few years I couldn't do it. I come back now a few years later. You're like up to 500 fucking episodes. You got
430 for something.
You got a composer. Big shout out to Bill composing all your shit.
Yeah.
You got Janine's been on this show. Nadia.
Vin comes a lot. My brother Anthony.
You got a Mighty Vin. I mean, I've used Mighty Vin for we did 400 episodes of a wrestling podcast together.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'm done.
See, that's the thing. Sometimes I don't ever feel like I'm done because I feel like there's always more for me to say. But I do sometimes feel tired. There are times where I'm like, am I going to do this forever?
Mike, do you know how many episodes of the Emilio Sparks Experience we did?
How many?
We did 386 episodes of the Emilio Sparks Experience.
I wasn't on every single one of those, though. You did them.
I did 386, but I think you were on for about 150.
I was on for a good amount.
You were about 150
but
episodes.
Like I say, that was very little commitment for me.
You just showed up.
I really just showed up.
Showed up. And then I've done 400 episodes of Wrestle Rap.
Yeah.
And then you want to talk about, like, I produce podcasts still. Yeah. I'm just like,
you know what?
I don't want to do my own right now.
You know what it is? I've got a job. I've got sometimes two jobs.
I'll come and hang out on yours.
Yeah.
I'll pitch an idea to you. We'll do it.
But honestly, I'm not close to being done. I think a part of me would die without PCMC because I need the
creative outlet.
I need the creative outlet.
I need the creative outlet. Trust me. I get it. Which is why, you know, I do certain things. And it's not often. But yeah, I have a creative outlet on my YouTube channel where I like to do these slice of life pieces.
Yeah.
It's the reason why I will sit and do yoga with a wrestler, or I'll go and, you know, do jujitsu or go shopping. And I will show this stuff because I need the outlet. And I also like the satire in a lot of these folks take the vlogging aspect extremely serious, right? Where they're full-time content creators.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we're going to do a satire on this.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to do it our way and not take it serious and kind of shit, poke fun at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know.
I don't know. It's just, I need the creativity. I need the
outlet. Been trying, though. And this is, let's break down the fourth wall here. Let's bring the audience in. I've been trying to get Mike to start a YouTube channel. And I told him I would produce it because I don't know if you noticed.
We've talked about this. When I say we, I mean me and the audience have talked about this.
I am a rather successful producer in the content creation space for other people, where I have built YouTube channels that have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of views.
Yes.
This is what I do for a living.
We know.
And I've been wanting to sink my teeth into something pop culture-y with this son of a bitch for 3 years now.
I've been thinking about it seriously for years. But remember, before we started PCMC, I thought about it for like 3 years.
And you never did it.
No, but then I did. Like, things percolate for a long time.
Oh, the perking?
I remember like,
you did a book thing, right?
We did a site. I remember like, it's got to be exactly right. My
no,
thing,
see, you're wrong. It doesn't have to be exactly
no, no,
right.
No, it doesn't. I The product does not have to be perfect. I like looseness. I mean, the idea has to be right for me.
But I think the idea is pretty much.
Because I knew when I wanted to do a podcast, I had a bunch of different ideas. And then PCMC was just the right one. And then right. I was like, this is the one we're going to do.
But that came with, again, you know.
My thing with YouTube is I'm like Mark Maron on this. I like the audio. I like being an audio only. I also feel like YouTube is a cesspool. Like, I feel like YouTube, as much as I like YouTube and YouTubers, I feel like...
It depends on what your algorithm is and what your FYP is going to show you.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that I won't watch on there, but there's some things that I will make sure to, you know, make sure that my algorithm
I also
stays.
Don't like what that. It is. If we film them, see, the thing I really think about is doing more of, if you want to break down the wall, fourth wall.
Let's break down the
thing
walls.
I don't think about doing just this podcast with visuals. I don't want to do that.
It doesn't have to be.
I don't like the idea. I don't like the idea of not being able to edit it, to be honest with you. Not that the shows are really edited. Obviously, you listen, you know it isn't. But
it's one of my pet peeves.
But if it's video, it's not that. But the thing I do think about is more like PCMC branded spinoff things, like video essays or things like that.
That's the stuff I think about. Now that's what I think would work very well.
It's percolating, baby.
So let's perk a little bit more. And I don't know if there's an email to this, but harass Mike. Maybe slide in his DM. And Jen, I know you have a lot of influence with him because you're in his ear, because you go eat popcorn together at movies and you go walk Peach or whatever you couples do.
I just got Peach insurance, pet insurance.
That's a whole new level of commitment for a pet.
Yeah.
This is like your kid.
It's expensive.
You're better than me, buddy.
The thing is, I love little Peach so much.
I barely got insurance for myself.
She got, you know, whenever she's sick, I'm like, I can't, I don't know what to do with myself. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, you're all in,
what's to my baby?
Is this your dog or Jen's dog? Or is it your dog together? Did you get a couple dog?
We are mommy and daddy. It lives in her house, but we are mommy and daddy.
Okay, no, you're not mommy and daddy. It's just a dog. It's not mommy and daddy.
How dare you? Excuse me, have you not seen the picture of us with matching onesies?
No, you never sent me this. Send it to me.
Hold on.
Right now, I want to see this.
Hold on. You've seen this.
No, I don't think I have.
It was the...
First off, your Instagram stinks too, by the way. Like, I want you to do more. Did you guys rent a cabin just to do this photo shoot?
No, not just to do it. But it was something we did while we were in the... It's actually a yurt, not a cabin.
What'd you say?
A yurt.
Did you just go Finland?
No, we went to the Catskill Mountains over Thanksgiving weekend.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
Don't hate me because I have love in my life and I have a daughter. Don't hate me because I have a family and a child.
What's crazy is the dog looks like you.
Yeah, she takes after me.
She looks like you.
She's nervous. I'll be like, she gets it from me.
Yeah, she gets my anxiety from dad.
She gets dad's anxiety.
Stop it. Oh, God. I think that's the thing I don't like about animals is, you know, are you going to see mommy and daddy? Mommy and daddy, come on, Pookie. You hungry? You want to go get the...
I'm sorry that you don't have love in your heart. I'm sorry you blocked yourself off from one of the great joys in this world.
Hey, I was a man that dated a woman with two children. I was fine.
That's different.
They were like pets.
That's different. Peach wasn't with Jen. Like, we birthed her together. Our love made Peach. All right. What are we talking about? We're talking about...
Well, I'm still trying to wrap my head around that because I got a visual in my head now. Wow. Okay. I mean, cute photo, though.
Thank you.
Cute photo.
John Candy, I Like Me from 2025, directed by Colin Hanks, produced by many people, but also it's Ryan Reynolds' production company. Ryan Reynolds is...
I just...
Once upon a time, like early episodes, I talked very highly of Ryan Reynolds.
I remember, especially when around Deadpool.
Yeah, but now first of all, his wife is a... I don't like her.
No.
I don't like the way she treats people. No. I don't like the way she talks about people. I don't like the way she fat shames people who are just complimenting on her being pregnant. And I don't like him. Do you know, at the red carpet for this movie, John Candy, I Like Me, he said something. He said, oh,
What did he try to promote? Mint Mobile? Was it the vodka?
Oh, that's so pathetic. No, he said something weird to a reporter. And Eugene Levy, who was standing next to him, said, don't say that to a reporter.
What did he say?
And he said, don't tell me what I could do. He had a little baby fit with Eugene Levy. Fuck yourself, Ryan Reynolds. You don't ever talk to Eugene Levy that way.
No, he's an angel.
But anyway.
On Earth.
John, we're continuing from last week, talking about John Candy. Something I forgot to say last week.
What?
Uncle Buck inspired not one, but two TV versions.
Yes. Oh, my God. I can't believe we didn't cover the two TV versions.
Uncle Buck. So the first Uncle Buck was Kevin Meaney, the comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And it had the very dark premise of mom and dad died. So Uncle Buck's got to take care of the kids. But then
that theme song was pure shit.
It's
just, Uncle Buck.
Yeah. And he's just like, it's just like trying to recreate moments from the movie, the big pancake, the fucking pinstripe. But then sitcom legend.
Mike Epps.
No. Before we get to him, on the Kevin Meaney show, what's her name? Audrey Meadows from The Honeymooners played their grandmother who, like, butt heads. She wanted custody. They added a whole nother. It lasted one season. And then Mike Epps did a version.
Uncle Buck, yeah.
Uncle Buck, which looked a little bit more original, but that also didn't last.
It didn't last either. You know what it is? And we spoke about it towards the end. There was a light to him where you have to go with the dark. And where in scenes where John Candy was portrayed as like dark and brooding in his personal life in regards to being this character, Buck Russell. And then like the shift in light, I don't know if Kevin Meaney had that. And I don't know if Mike Epps had that.
And I like Kevin Meaney. He was a good comic.
Right. I think they had the ha-ha parts, both of them.
Yeah.
But I don't think they played it with the same heart and tone that John Candy played it.
No.
I think they all wanted to hit the comedic beats because it was episodic sitcom television.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that's where
And that was also a time in the, you know, that was a time in showbiz where like you had a successful movie that was a comedy, like why don't you turn it into a sitcom?
Yeah, and most of the time it didn't work.
Well, it's hard because we fall in love with that Uncle Buck, and now you're a different Uncle Buck.
Well, they did it with The Odd Couple twice.
Yeah, or more than that, like twice that like really mattered.
Yeah,
but, like they tried. Yeah. All right. Well, this movie it kind of goes through his whole life. I mean, mostly his career life. It begins. Well, it begins actually a cold open with Bill Murray, who is like, you know, when I see his face, I really miss him. He's like, I wish I had more bad things to say about him. And then he's like, well, there's this one time we did this thing. And then they cut it off and then they get to the story later on, which is like not even that big of a story.
No. So to me, I was like, oh, so the central theme is going to be in this movie or this documentary is the void that he left.
Yeah.
And there is no like lightness to this. It's just going to be a heavy, dark tone.
I don't think that's true.
Mike, it starts and ends incredibly sad.
Yes, it does. But I think in the middle, we're having a lot of fun. And we're showing the good he brought us.
Right. But again, it's this really... And maybe for
me... Well, the man died at 35.
I know, but you don't think it's an odd focus on death throughout the whole thing?
How does a man... Sorry, not 35, 43.
Okay.
I'm 1 year away from death.
God forbid.
But, I mean, how can it not? It's sad, but in not in a depressing way, in a sort of celebratory way. It begins with, we see footage of the church. Like, he was a real Catholic guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that's what I did like.
Yeah. Apparently, he died, like, reading the Bible. They found the Bible in his bed when they found him dead. He was, they show the church, and then we hear Dan Aykroyd's
eulogy.
There was two. Dan Aykroyd did one, and Catherine O'Hara did one.
I mean, both of them were incredibly gut-wrenching.
I have Dan Aykroyd's right here.
Could you read a little bit?
I will read the entirety of it.
Okay.
I give you, no, I don't know, should I do?
No, please don't do it as Aykroyd, please.
Don't do Aykroyd. I'm going to give
Skull vodka.
I'm going to give it out today in the manner which he would have wanted it. You have been accorded a great honor. You stand up, walk to the front of the room, and without grief or weeping, deliver loudly and clearly, short and straight to the salient points, the best tribute in oratory possibility from the heart of an allied professional. He's such a weird writer, Dan Aykroyd. a creative brother, a fellow Canadian who loved this boy from Dunlins like we had the same blood. We salute first the patriot who always professed and promoted the positive interests of the North, but who also welcomed into his fold Americans and was enfolded in turn by them. Like all on our planet, they eventually came to see his indistillable value. This is no mere life we reflect on today. This is as full of life as any human can live. Joy, emotional abundance of spirit, infectious rage, a tinge of Lugosi-like madness with his bottom reverse vampire teeth and all, a titan of a gentle golden man, magnificent in visage, eyes, and frame. Let none be deceived by what the less enlightened would label as girth, for there are many witnesses to the clapping power of his mitts, the steel in his forearms, the quickness and lightness of foot and leg. Challenge him and you would be hurled away like a toy. There's a word in our language which we don't hear much anymore, but applies to Candy. The word is grand. He was a grand man. John Franklin Candy, devoted son, brother, altar boy, student, salesman, stage, radio, and television writer and performer. World-famous comedy ambassador, farce and dramatic actor, international feature film star, director, businessman, connoisseur, percussionist, charitable benefactor, husband, father, and the sweetest, most generous person ever known to me. I loved him from the instant I laid eyes on him in his first impeccable suit, and I will never stop. That's the way they opened the movie.
I mean, that's also a really touching way to talk about a friend.
Yes, yes. Better than the eulogy I gave our friends.
No, actually, I thought it was the complete opposite. I thought you did. I thought it was very fitting because do you remember somebody in the church
yelled at us?
Yelled at us.
Some cousin of his or something.
And they cursed, and we were like, "Oh, relax.
You cursed at a church, buddy.
You cursed at a church. Like, why don't you relax? Because you know, because people, like, whoever was saying something, they were utilizing Joe,
yeah,
and they said something funny, and we laughed.
No, what happened was we were sitting in the back.
Yeah.
This was our friend who was Joe, who was a comedian, a wrestler, very funny, funny guy. And we were all sitting in the back and
still to this day, the we most were
whispering about memories about him.
Yeah.
So like, remember the time I believe our friend Dave said, do you remember the time he picked someone up and put them through the windshield of a car or something like that? Yeah. And then we started to giggle. And then I was like, well, what about the time he did this? Blah, blah. I mean, there were so many stories.
But somebody was also eulogizing him and they said something too. And they were like,
and then some guy in the crowd was like, what the fuck is so funny?
And we were like, we're talking about Joe.
Talking about Joe, yeah. And then I went up and
you quoted, I'm a real American.
Yeah, I did. I said I want to read from the book of Hulk.
Yeah. You hurt my friends, you take my pride.
And I said he was a funny person and he made everyone else laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was also...
It was the perfect way
that
to
was
really...
also... After that was the last cigarette I ever smoked.
Good.
And I had already been done with smoking, but I felt in honor of him I should do something self-destructive. Yeah. So I had a cigarette after the eulogy.
Okay. Makes sense.
But that's how this film starts.
Yeah, and I think that's an incredible way to do it, and then it goes into...
Well, that's the thing. There is no scandal. He really was a nice guy. The thing that you do learn is that he didn't have it together the way you thought he did.
Right.
He had insecurity.
Right.
He had lack of confidence. And towards the end, he had bad anxiety and anxiety attacks.
Well, there were certain vices, though.
Oh, for sure. Eating and drinking and smoking.
Yeah. The three big ones that killed ultimately him. Led to his demise.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know,
but it was. But again, I wish that they would have covered more of the, as I said in my notes, the I wanted to hear more about the cliches of the comic and the sad clown who was sad and anxious. And I wanted them to get into the vices, but unfortunately they glossed over those things and his troubles. I want to know what was the cause of the anxiety.
Well, I think they talk about it.
And why did he choose food, cigarettes, and alcohol as a coping mechanism?
I think Tom Hanks, who's one of the talking heads, puts it well where he says he thought he was on borrowed time. See, his father, when he was a kid in Canada, his father dropped dead of a heart attack at 35. And by the way, they show a picture of his father, and it just looked like John Candy playing a character. It's just John Candy's face with like a little mustache and glasses. But not only did he die on John Candy's birthday.
Yeah.
when he was like a little kid and he was 35 only. But not only that, the family lost, the family never cried. They never talked about it. They just moved on. And the moving on without dealing with it in any significant way is what fucked him, I think.
Right. And that was another thing I wish that they touched upon more, was the aspect of grief, right? Where they touched upon it with him. But I wanted to hear more accounts from maybe
siblings. That was the drinking and eating.
Right. But I wish that they had more with the siblings and with the
But they do have a lot with his kids and wife.
Right. But I wish she would have talked about more how he dealt with that grief. Or how he never vocalized.
Well, I don't think he did.
That's the thing. He never vocalized it. And I wish that they would have touched upon that.
Right.
Where she spoke about, my husband, they never did this with grief.
Yeah.
You know, because what I thought was a very good way to do this, they dealt with the grief of losing John Candy.
Right, yeah.
And they did the opposite of what his family did when John Candy's father passed away.
Right, they dealt with it.
They dealt with it.
But sadly, it was similar because his son says, you know, I grew up mostly without him. Because the son's younger. What's the son's name? Christopher Candy. The daughter was Jennifer. I think, you know, he also never went. I think he went to therapy at the very end of his life.
Towards the tail end.
Towards the very end. And that, you know, the comedian Dave Thomas from SCTV is like, he would go to different doctors. It's like, because you go to a doctor say, you got to stop drinking and eating. And he'd fucking just stop going to that doctor. So he kind of knew. He was like running from something. But that's the interesting thing was, he ran into it. Like, if he hadn't drank and smoked, he wouldn't have
died. He'd still be alive.
It's like self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Like,
but I think the thing is, too, when that happens to you at such a young age and you don't address the grief or the fear, and you're constantly reminded on your birthday that the male role model in your life is gone.
And you're kind of like the patriarch now.
Right. And then as you get older, your mortality stares you in the face. And you think, well, if my dad passed away at 35, and again, I can't speak for him, but this seems like to be an underlying trope in the life of a lot of people, not just men. Every single person that loses somebody at such a young age,
yeah, sure,
they're constantly wondering, am I on borrowed time?
Well, yeah, I mean, bad hearts will run in a family.
Absolutely.
So
I get mine checked regularly.
Yeah. So if a man dies young and his son will think, am I going to, you'll always be thinking, when will I get to that age? Will I die the age he dies? Will I outlive him? Also, you think he was raised in he was born in what, 50 something?
Yeah.
So they're not talking about shit at that point.
No.
They're not going to therapy.
No, everything was repressed. And again, you smoked your way through it. You drank your way through it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in certain cases, you just never discussed it at all.
And he, even though he was really talented, he was very shy. You can see it on interviews throughout his career. He's very shy and very vulnerable. Like, when people say things about his weight, you can tell he's hurt by it.
Well, the media never really did right by him.
Yeah.
Movies, the medium of movies did right by him.
Yeah.
And the people that loved him did right by him. And they looked past certain, I would say, standards of beauty that at the time, specifically when he really caught on in the early 80s, right? You had guys, they were just chiseled. They had square jaws. They had blue eyes, blonde hair, brown hair, flowing locks. You know what I mean? Like, pecs and abs and like the standard of beauty. Like, you had guys like Warren Beatty.
Yeah.
Right? That's who they like. Oh, this man is beautiful. You know what I mean? And then in the later 80s, they had guys like Don Johnson. Right? These masculine men that were essentially just very handsome.
He became a leading man quickly.
In the most unconventional way.
Right.
Which is why it's like, wow, dude, I don't think you understood what you did for so many actors,
right?
Because you took what was the standard of beauty back then and you knocked it on its ass.
Yeah. Well, there's an interview with that one actor, I forget his name, who was in the movie he directed. And he was saying that, like, when somebody feels like an everyman like that. When they succeed, the audience feels like they're succeeding too. And that does something for the audience. In a, you know, he, that's like a real looking guy.
He's an extremely real looking guy, but I will say this, right? When you watch, let's say, Vacation, National Lampoon,
yeah,
and you see him, and he's massive, but he has the glasses on and the hair slicked to the side. You look at him and go, that's a big son of a bitch. There was nothing average about John Candy.
Yeah.
Like,
well, he was a, when he wanted to be a football player. He played football in high school. He blew up his knee. He had no left kneecap.
None.
They removed it and replaced nothing. So he just didn't. He would. And every movie you've seen him in, he's got one kneecap.
Yeah.
Which is gotta be. I mean, with the weight that he had too, that's gotta be bad.
Oh, you were in pain. Your body's in pain, yeah. Dude.
One of the first big things he did in show business is, there was a famous, the show Godspell, the musical, in 1972, there was a Canadian production. And this production had John Candy, Martin Short, Eugene Levy, Andrea Martin, Gilda Radner, Paul Schaefer. Crazy.
Yeah, that's a lineup.
And then from that, the same year, The Second City, which was an improv-like theater from Chicago, that's why it's called Second City, they wanted to open a theater in Canada. And they went and they, a lot of those people, Godspell got in it, but then also like Dave Thomas, the head writer was Harold Ramis,
yep,
from Ghostbusters, and just, they did SCTV, which I believe someone on the documentary describes as like a little bit more like less cool, more rugged version of like SNL.
Yeah.
Oh, Bill Murray too was he was not. Bill Murray went to SNL quickly, but Bill Murray, so he wasn't on SCTV, but Bill Murray was in Second City.
But he was in Second.
So they knew each other on stage a lot, and they did Stripes together.
Yeah, but again, Second City is like this well established. It's like the UBC now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is Second City still even a thing?
Yeah,
yeah, right.
Conan O'Brien tells this sketch about, he's just about this sketch that he saw on SCTV that like changed, he like, it changed his life. It's called Yellow Belly. It's like, the sketch is like, it's the Old West and John Candy is a character named Yellow Belly and he's just a scared guy and he's walking on the street and then a little kid with his mother's like, Mom, I think that's Yellow Belly. And he turns around and shoots the kid in the back. And then the mother's like, What did you do? And then he runs away and gets behind her and shoots her in the back. And that's the whole sketch.
He had this like incredible timing for like a big guy.
Which... Yeah, he had unlimited energy.
Yeah.
Like he was light on his feet.
But you know,
he played tons of different roles. He did a lot of different accents and stuff.
Well, the thing that I didn't like was it's like, you know, obviously you have to show his life through a bunch of vignettes and clips.
I mean, the footage you have of him is this stuff.
Yeah, right. But then it just goes, and then he died.
Well, no, we go through it. We go through TV, then the movies.
But it's quickly glanced over. I mean, they're not getting into specific like things that made him pop.
I disagree. I mean, they start with 1941.
But again, I was looking at it mm-hmm. from a lens where I wanted more than what they were giving. Like,
yeah,
I was good from the trailer. When I first seen the trailer, I was under the guise that we're gonna get a full thing.
Yeah,
we're gonna
get
a fleshed out round, like full thing.
Like here's his personal life.
Yes, here's why he got into this. Here's what drove him for this. Here's where his success was. Here's how he dealt with the success. Here was the breakthrough. Yeah. And then, unfortunately, it was cut short before we can get to something else. And then we play on the what if.
Yeah.
And how he, and now how his children and his wife had to deal with this legacy.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
felt that that's what we didn't get.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I like seeing his life through the art. I like going through all
these
roles.
Because that's all we have is the art.
Yeah.
And then, do you remember when Conan says, like, it was like the Eureka moment?
Yeah.
When he said that, you know, he wanted to try comedy, and John Candy tells him, you don't try comedy, you do comedy.
Yeah. He's like Yoda.
Yeah. It was that moment where Conan was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. And well, Conan he was in Harvard as a young person.
Writing for the Lampoon. See, I didn't even know that he had a connection. John Candy had a connection to Conan O'Brien. So watching like the documentary, I learned that. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Well, it's more like Conan like was just a normal fan of his. And then he invited him. And Conan said he was exactly what you wanted him to be. He was funny. He was nice to everybody. And a lot of people talk about that. They talk about how he was like a people pleaser. He would say he did favors for people. He said yes to everybody.
It's got
to
be exhausting.
He would do hours of signing autographs. He was nice to a fault.
But that's got
to
be exhausting, right?
Because he didn't take care of himself. No, yeah.
But again, imagine the immense toll it takes on you, not even from a physical aspect, but just from the mental aspect of people-pleasing, right? You and I have both went through thousands of hours and years of therapy to understand, like, you know, certain things about ourselves. And you know, you learn about, like, oh my God, yes, sometimes I do people please because I want this impression to be made, and specifically under the microscope of Hollywood,
yeah.
You think, oh man, I might be pigeonholed and typecasted as being the funny fat guy.
Yeah.
So now I have to be the funny fat guy 24/7, even at the apex of his fame and career.
Yeah.
I still have to perform as the funny fat guy when I first started.
Yeah.
Right,
they talk about the famous scene in Stripes where he does the mud wrestling. He didn't want to do that at all.
No.
He didn't want to do that. And if you look, there's no, not that he was like demanded it, but like there's really no like fat jokes. I mean, there's the one like he's Canadian, so even when he's being aggressive, he's sounding very polite. There's that one interview where he's like, you know, I forget what he asked him. Like, do you think that it will hurt your career being so big? And he's like, honestly, I don't think about it. It doesn't bother me. Does it bother you? And the interviewer was like, no. And he's like, oh, okay. I was just wondering because you brought it up.
Right.
Which is the Canadian way of saying fuck you.
Fuck you. But again, I don't think his contemporaries ever looked at him as that. But I think the rest of Hollywood.
Sure. Sure.
Would pigeonhole him into that. Right. And if you look at it, he really didn't work outside of anything with the small group of people that he would work with.
But I gotta say, if he had lived, I think he would have had a career very similar to Robin Williams. Because before he died, he did a serious role in the Oliver Stone movie JFK. Like that was, I mean, he's playing like a really like a kind of Cajun accent, but it's not a comedic role. And I think he was such a good actor, as we talked about last week. I think he would have done more drama. I think he would have had a career very similar to Robin Williams. Because like Robin Williams, he started off as a funny man and then just had an insane naturalness for acting. Like in the documentary, the director of Home Alone, Chris Columbus, compares him to Charlie Chaplin. He's like seeing him, it was like Charlie Chaplin, the way like he would express so much just with his eyes. Like that's like natural talent.
Well, the what if and the natural talent part, right? Because after watching the doc and then, you know, Uncle Buck again, I fell into a rabbit hole and I wanted to learn some more. And you're talking about a dramatic role. There was a project that he was attached to that was supposed to be a biopic about Fatty Arbuckle.
Oh, really? See, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I think that you're right. I think that probably would have been his version. His Robert Downey Jr. had been Chaplin. Great. He would have been Fatty Arbuckle.
Yeah, and I think kind of like the way Robin Williams like the way he did like Good Will Hunting. I think easily Candy could have done something like that.
You know what? I think I think you're right. I you know, and especially in the 90s, like the later part of the 90s.
Yeah.
Where comedic actors were taking on these more serious roles because they wanted to be respected as thespians, you know? I mean, he was in talks to do a Pulitzer Prize play called The Confederacy of Dunces.
Right, which was a movie that they had been it's been a movie that they've tried to make for a billion years.
Yeah. And then there was another one where they were supposed to play an Inuit traveler.
Yeah, Inuit, yeah.
And then he passed on. First, Sam Kennison passed on it because he passed away. Then John Candy did it and passed, was attached to it, and he died. And then they wanted to get Chris Farley to do it, and he passed away. So then they just finally scrapped this picture.
Yeah. It's like cursed.
It's absolutely cursed.
Well, think about this. There's talking about those guys. There's a scene. This documentary does make a point of talking about Belushi's death because they were friends. And again, Dave Thomas from SCTV was like, I was what we told him. I said, you know, John Belushi died. And he said that he started crying and he hugged him and he said, oh God, it's starting. Which was, he said, was very prophetic because it was like, the party's gonna catch up to us now.
Yeah.
And, you know, people thought that. I mean, they talk about his last couple movies, he had to insure himself. Like, to when you do a movie, you have to be insured because you're valuable to the project. And so if you got sick, you know,
it would injured be, yeah, or whatever.
You know, every actor in a movie, like, not every actor in a movie, but like stars of movies have to be insured.
Millions of dollars.
He insured himself in his last movies because he was so unhealthy. People thought he might not make it through. Yeah. So, yeah. Remember Camp Candy?
Camp Candy was an incredible cartoon. And like I told you via text message, the only time I was able to watch it was very early in the morning before school.
USA Comedy Train or whatever it's called?
Yeah, because they never aired it on anything else outside of
it.
Like...
That's what's crazy is he's in it.
As the kid. Yeah, you would see... Well, they would
John Candy, the Camp... It's Camp Candy. It's a Saturday morning cartoon with him as a camp counselor.
But
that's it.
Right, but he voiced the character.
And he did like live action
intros. But
the
live action stuff is I remember completely. And I'm just like, what an interesting take to do. And again, at the height of your career, you're like, oh, you know what? I'm going to do an animated series.
Yeah. He also co-owns towards the end. What team did he co-own? But that was like a big deal for him. A Canadian football team. Like, he loved that. What was it?
The Toronto Argonauts.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. He was really into that. He traveled with that.
It was with him, Wayne Gretzky, and this... Canadian, this American sports executive who owned the Kings, some dude. I forgot his name. I think Bruce something or other. But it was that guy, Wayne Gretzky and John Candy. They owned this Canadian football team.
Yeah.
Which I thought was incredibly cool. And the Argonauts, because I just wanted to look it up. The Argonauts took home the 1991 Grey Cup, which is their version of the Vince Lombardi Trophy. So he technically is a successful team owner won the pinnacle of, you know, the Canadian Football League's cup. You know what was hilarious to me? As I was reading about, like, possible roles that he was up for, do you know him and Stallone wanted to collaborate with John Hughes in a comedy called Bartholomew vs. Neff? And it was about two feuding neighbors.
Really?
Yeah.
That could have been interesting.
Yeah. And they wanted to. He was attached to a Carl Reiner directed remake of the 1950s film The Last Holiday.
Really? Wow! Yeah.
But then that went on later on to Queen Latifah, and then they did like a loose adaptation of the.
Do you know that he was originally supposed to be Louis Tully in Ghostbusters?
Yeah,
but he had this vision where he was like, "I'm going to play him German." And Ivan Reitman was like, no, we don't see that for the role. And he's like, nah, I got to play him as German or I'm not doing it.
I'm not playing it anymore.
So they gave it to Rick Moranis, who was an SCTV member. Not in the original season, but later on. Yeah, there was a... But he also would turn things down because he wanted to stay home with the kids. Right. He was like a family man. He bought a farm. And they said, like, he loved it. He loved being in his hammock in the back. He loved just being at home with the kids in the pool. And he would turn stuff down to try to not travel.
Well, I think, too, again, his father's death, I think, really impacted him that way.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's like, not to be morbid, but I think he knew he was on borrowed time.
Yeah.
And unfortunately,
but he made that happen.
Right. It was due to his own hand.
Right. If he'd been healthy, he would have lived.
Right. But I also think, too, you got to remember, when you are in Hollywood, when you're a successful actor or actress, you do live a life of excess.
Sure.
And And now, again, I don't think his that type of access was, because again, I think he was such a firm conservative Catholic in regards to the sanctity of family.
Yeah,
you know, that I think if, for him it wasn't infidelity, like we talked about. It was cigarettes, it was food, and it was alcohol. And I think when that's abundant,
yeah,
where socialized drinking,
yeah,
cool, man. You want to power through and you want to drink? No problem. It is at your disposal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here you go, right? Because right. Look at it.
People don't tell you no.
Look at most of his buddies. Love to drink. Aykroyd, big drinker.
Yeah, yeah, of
right?
course.
Bill Murray, big drinker.
Right.
Probably partied with Belushi, big drinker.
Of course.
All those Second City actors, big drinkers.
Yeah, of course.
They loved it. So what happens? You start to get a dependency to alcohol.
Yeah.
And when the party's over, now you're sitting by yourself, and then all the bad stuff happens.
Yeah, yeah.
You start to think about the bad stuff. So I think with him, you know, his panic attacks and his anxiety was probably even worse when you're by yourself, because now you get to sit and you think.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Well, Dave Thomas tells a story where they went to a party, and he got super drunk. And he turned into like Sad John, and he was like walking down the street alone, and he was like in the, he was his ride. So he was like driving next to him, and he was like, John, get in the car. And he got in the car and he was like, you don't know, man. You don't know the real me. You don't know what's in my head. So he had a lot of sin. Like, it was kind of like he had this bravado.
Yeah.
But that was covering up for like a real insecurity. He didn't even want to, the movie shows us that he didn't even want to audition to Second City. His friends were like, come, we're auditioning, come on. And then they put his name on it. And
yeah.
And they just called his name, and he was like, fuck. And he went and auditioned, and that's how he got into it.
Yeah.
He got tricked into this career. He had no confidence in himself.
Why? And again, I think it's because of, you know, that negative atmosphere when it comes to being overweight.
Sure, yeah.
You know, where you're looked upon in a certain way, where it's like, yeah, all right, you're good, but I don't know.
Right,
you,
right.
You know what I mean? So I think that's, and I'm not saying that the documentary didn't glance over that, but I wish they would have touched upon that more with him as well. You know, where he was, because again, they say he was very insecure about his weight. Yes,
yeah.
I think we know that. But,
and about his talent, too. He was just insecure, vulnerable guy. You know, he didn't think he was that good. That's, you know.
But aren't some of the best?
Sure.
Like, the best. Aren't they the ones that are probably the most sad?
Yeah, I mean. I mean,
look at some of the great comedians of the last, I don't know, maybe 50 years.
Well,
they all have a sadness to them.
Yeah. Well, being funny, right, you can grow into it as a defense mechanism. And that's how you become a funny person. So that, I think, happens for a lot of people. I don't know if, you know, the sad clown thing is always true, but he's clearly a case of it being
true. He is.
He's clearly a sad guy.
Him and Robin Williams are probably the two most recognizable sad clowns.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there are a ton of other cases of sad clowns within Hollywood, but, you know, especially when you get that big that quick. I mean, his career skyrocketed right after, like,
yeah,
listen, he won 2 Emmy Awards in SCTV, like, he has 2.
Yeah,
but like after that, dude, he's on the ride.
And
the roller coasters,
Splash was a big movie.
Like, there was no drop, like, you know what I mean, like, where there's like a lull point in your career. Like, his career
was, towards like Cool Runnings wasn't a big, he had some failures.
Mike, they casted him as, he was going to be one of the voices of one of the animals in Pocahontas. And the only reason why they cut the character out is because he died.
Right. No, I don't think his career was waning, but I think it wasn't, he was always a huge star, but not every one of his movies was good. I mean, he's in Nothing But Trouble, which is a horrible
movie. Horrible film, yeah.
Horrible movie. All right, so we talked about Uncle Buck last week. Outside of Uncle Buck, what would be your second favorite performance by him?
Oh, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Okay.
There is just
the vulnerability is there.
Yeah, you talk about vulnerability and sadness. It's masqueraded in a mustache and a perm.
Right. But we learn the twist at the end is
he has
the
nothing.
Wife that he's talking about throughout the movie passed away.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. So it's interesting that that's such a great performance for him, because it's so close to who he really was, hiding a death that was haunting him.
You're masquerading.
Yeah.
And I always thought, like, while Uncle Buck is probably his best performance in regards to, like, we talked about, like, the dark and the contrast of the light.
Yeah.
I think in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, it's his best performance.
Well, the scene that inspires the name of this documentary, the I Like Me scene, it's great. I mean, it's, you know, the plot roughly is that, like, these guys are kind of traveling together. They meet, and, you know, one's the funny one, one's the straight man. Steve Martin's kind of the straight man. He's constantly annoyed by
John Candy.
John Candy, who is just this, like,
happy-go-lucky.
He plays this very annoying guy.
Yeah.
And that's the comedy. And at one point, they're, like, in a hotel room together. And Steve Martin just lays into him. He's just like, you're full of shit. You're boring. You don't know how to tell a story. You're the most annoying person I've ever met. And then he just, but the thing is, the way he's just acting without words, like the way he's just taking all that,
yeah,
that the negative shit, like you see it in his eyes, like it's heartbreaking. Steve Martin in the documentary talks about, like, how it was hard to even film that because he felt bad because he could see his eyes. Like, he was like, you know, this is pretend, right? Like, and then he says, you know what? If that makes you feel better, fine. I'm an easy target. But let me tell you something. I like me. My wife likes me. And it's perfect to name this movie that, because maybe in his strong moments that is what he felt, but maybe he didn't really like him. The right. Real Candy.
Right. Which is why, you know, like, I'm a big nuanced guy in professional wrestling, like the subtleties of certain things.
Uh-huh.
The little things.
Yeah.
And that whole scene that you just said, that is all about nuance.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
That is the definition of nuance. And, you know, the eye movements, the way, like, the tempered breathing.
His whole face.
The, like, the facial, yeah, expressions changing.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, that, which is great. Like, before he says, I like me, my wife likes me, you notice, like, they both take a beat.
Yeah.
And there's, like, this quick, like, breath. And in that breath, like, you knew, like, something was...
He also, like, stutters. He goes, I like me.
Right.
He says, like, he's... Yeah.
But it's that quick moment.
Yeah.
Where, you know how, like, you get into a confrontation. Well, let's say a friend. And you say some things in the heat of anger, and you react rather than respond to, yeah, a situation. And then the person just... fucking, like, you take, yeah, a, yeah, moment, and then they just fucking come back at, yeah, you. But they don't come back at you in a disrespectful way. They just come back at you by saying their truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, and it blew my mind. I remember watching this film for the first time, and then I recently watched it again because it was on Pluto TV.
Yeah.
Like, they played it all month long during Thanksgiving.
Classic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Watching it now in my 40s, like, I have a different perspective of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles than I did when I was in my teens.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh,
as a father, it hits me, yeah, harder too.
How does it feel?
You know, I thought if I were to lose my
Peach, like you,
if I were to lose my daughter, you know, it would hurt. I don't know if I'd be able. Oh, hello.
Peach is calling you right now,
Daddy.
Come home.
Well, look, I'm glad we're talking about this, because this brings me to my favorite thing that's said in the whole documentary. This is a quote that Mel Brooks says, because Mel Brooks did Spaceballs with him. Mel Brooks says he stuck acting in his back pocket and behaved like a human being. He was a total actor because he was a total person.
Mm.
So, and Mel Brooks is a great director, right? Yeah. So what an interesting, I mean, just that's such a, you can unpack that quote. He stuck acting in his back pocket and behaved like a human.
Now, is Mel saying that most actors in Hollywood at his fame level, they don't act human?
They're acting like there's...
Or is all the world the stage and we're just merely players?
Well, you know, you can't catch him acting. You know what I mean? Like, he's so natural. Like, that's the thing. When comedians transition into... And he was an improv guy, although he did a little bit of stand-up. But when comedians transition into acting, sometimes it works and sometimes it absolutely does not. But when it does work, it's because they have a naturalness to it.
Yes.
And he brought himself to it. I mean, his son and his family even says, like, probably Uncle Buck is his best role because it is the one most like him.
It's him.
Yeah. And Hughes wrote it for him, thinking about him.
Exactly.
But I just love that idea, like, he's not acting. He put acting in his back pocket. And it also shows that, like, even though he got rich, obviously, like, he stayed an everyman. Like, when he says he's a total actor because he was a total person, like, he was an actual person.
Yeah,
he wasn't,
no.
Like, you know, some of these actors, like, let me pick on Tom Cruise because he's an easy target. How does he know what a human is? He has lived in a world of luxury and fame and money for so long. What's the last thing he walked into a store and bought a loaf of bread? Like, how can he play a human?
You can't.
he does. He's, you know what I mean?
You can't. And I think, like, even The Rock, perfect example.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Is The Rock going to do everyday things like make a sandwich?
No.
No. He's not going to make his own sandwich. No. Is he going
to? Does he even steam his own rice that he eats seven times a day?
No, he has a chef.
Yeah.
Oh. But do you understand what I'm saying? Like,
well, this is like, I loved Howard Stern as a kid. And in the 80s, he, obviously he's very problematic. But at the he struck a chord with people because he seemed like this everyday guy from Long Island. The reason why Howard Stern has been just so inaccessible for like the last 20 years is because he got rich and famous and nobody's talking about now. Well, his private jet. Like,
well, you know, that's the thing. Once you reach a certain level of fame and fortune in whatever you're not a person, you lose that. I don't want to say that moral compass, but there's definitely a side of humanity that you lose where it becomes the air is a little bit more rarefied.
Yeah.
And you live in terms of the bourgeoisie. Yeah.
But it seemed like Candy kept it. I mean, first of all, he met his wife working. They both were working at a department store. And he never left her for a younger girl. He loved his wife and he stayed with her to the end. He had his wife.
I think a testament of that probably goes to the wife.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Where you see her and she the way she talks about him.
Yeah.
You could tell she actually also probably didn't take any shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And she probably laid down, we like to say boundaries now. But there were probably some ground rules.
Sure, yeah.
You know, and again,
don't
that's why.
Don't drink in front of the
right,
kids.
And that's why I wish they got into that more.
A little more of the dirty.
Right? Like, because I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, where's the and then?
Well, there's one little moment where his daughter says, like, you know, he'd get annoyed and yell at us like a normal dad. And I kind of, part of me is like, well, where's. Give me a little bit of that, yeah, too. Like, because he is, you know, you're talking about how he's a normal human. Like, show me some of that.
Where's the qualities that make us human? Where's the ugliness? Where's the ego? Where's the bad side? Where's the, why is this one getting this and I'm not getting that?
Right,
you know, because we all go through that.
Right, right.
But again, the documentary was just a little too clean.
It's a little too reverent. It's a little too... He's the greatest of he's it's yeah,
but it's
a such
story,
a
but again but it's a story told by friends who love
exactly.
this guy
exactly
you know what I mean like if it was a random person then yeah let's
unlike that new Chevy Chase documentary everybody's talking
everybody
about.
Hates Chevy Chase I mean rightfully so
he's a truly bad person
horrible individual. But I think there's a book that Mike Myers' brother wrote about
yes,
John
yes,
Candy.
Yes, 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 yes.
That now I have to buy.
Yeah, I want to read that too.
I want to read that. Because
I bet
think
that gets deeper.
I think, and people are saying it's excellent.
Yeah.
So like, I want to know if that is like the more meat and taters.
Probably. Right. Probably. What else do we want to talk? Oh, let's talk the famous story of this famous scene in...
I know where you're going.
The racquetball scene in Splash, where he's hung over in the scene and he hits the ball against the wall and it hits him in the head and he falls down. And he's like, ah, my heart's beating like a rabbit. You want a beer? So
underrated movie.
So he is the night before he's like out drinking and Jack Nicholson shows up and they weren't friends, but he was like, oh, I know you. You're John Candy, blah, blah. Hang out with me. So they drank all night. He didn't go home. He didn't sleep. So he comes to the set like basically still like bombed and does that scene.
Incredible.
And it shows. Like,
but it works. Though.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
and look, it only took him three takes to get it so it would bounce off the wall and hit him.
But again, look at the character that he played in Splash.
Right? Yeah.
He was the opposite of the good boy.
Well,
that
they talk
Tom
about
Hanks
Johnny
was.
Toronto. Like, he had this alter ego where he was, like, Mr. Confidence, Mr., like, you know, I did make it. I'll pay the check. Don't matter. And his friend said, oh, he's Johnny Toronto.
Yeah.
That's that thing.
Right. But again, but maybe that's a touch of the ego, maybe some validation, you know? But if Jack Nicholson, if you're going
to. I mean, I don't drink, but if Jack Nicholson were like, do you want to drink with me? I'd be like, sure.
You have to.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? Right. Let's. Did you show him pictures of Peach?
I'd be like, this is my daughter.
And he'd be like, well, don't
fuck her.
Let me see the daughter.
Don't pull a John Huston on me and fuck my daughter.
Let me see. This is a dog.
He'd be like, this is a fucking dog. I don't think, even if it was a human, I don't think he wants to see pictures of your kids. He don't strike me as that kind of guy.
No, he's the complete opposite of John Candy.
Yeah, except they both enjoy a drink.
And they enjoy the drink.
But no, it's interesting. What? They don't say anything about anything else. They don't say anything about coke. They don't say anything about anything. Did he not do those things, or did we not talk about them?
I think that he probably did those things. It's the 80s. I think they all did it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
You know.
But the movie does not. The movie only ever says drinking.
Right, but you also know. I mean, we've been around people where the party's a little too party.
Yeah.
They're doing their thing, and you're like, ooh, I can't get down with that. Because you see, once it gets a hold of you, it fucking gets a hold of you.
Yeah.
So I think, which is why, they don't probably want to talk about that stuff. Yeah. Because again, cocaine in the 80s, while addicted forming, it was probably more recreational and social.
Sure. I mean, at that time,
in the 80s in Hollywood,
yeah.
Oh, crazy. It was so accessible. It was like, I mean,
it's how Belushi died. It's how fucking Chris Farley died.
They all, the booger sugar,
the booger sugar.
It's not good.
No,
just say no. That's why I think Rad worked on me so well, because I never did anything.
You did just say no.
I've said no constantly. I never even smoked a marijuana cigarette. Come on, how many times was I around friends of ours?
Or me back in the day.
Or you back in the day.
Yeah.
Would partake in the wacky tabacky. And I was like, no, I'm good, dude.
Yeah, and I mean, you listen back, talk about SNL early days, listen back to some Emilio Sparks Experience podcasts from like circa, 2012, 2011?
2010.
You'll.
I was very early on the podcasting
lots of people,
game.
You were. Lots of people on lots of things.
Yeah. You know,
I still remember a moment. Okay, so
let's see if this doesn't go on the cutting room floor.
No, this will be fine. So guys in showbiz, when you do a little stinger, like, oh, we'll be back next. You sometimes that's called a bump.
Yes.
So we were recording and I was like, are we going to do a bump? And then, also, folks, a bump can sometimes mean a little pile of cocaine.
A little booger sugar.
And everyone heard what I said, and then the laughter.
Just started.
Because some of us had been on bumps.
Yeah, they've been doing a couple of bumskis.
Yeah. So, there was that time. No more.
What a time.
No more stories like that. But, you know, never mind.
Yeah, no.
Never mind.
Offline. We'll talk offline.
Yeah. But
I don't want Peach listening to this thinking, oh my God, my dad was
my
a
daddy
fucking,
did what?
My daddy was a ruffian. What a scoundrel.
She doesn't know about my life before her.
Here we are watching All Dogs Go to Heaven in upstate New York. Where were you? In Grufk?
We were in Catskills.
Yeah, but what was the name of the place?
A yurt.
A yurt? I thought it was Grufk.
A yurt.
A yurt?
I'm not that familiar with the word either. I believe it's like a cabin.
Okay.
A yurt. I mean, we could Google what's the difference between a yurt and a cabin.
I mean, if you're from the streets, it's in New York City, it's yurt. But that's a greeting.
It is?
Yeah. Yurt.
What's the difference between cabin
and a guguk?
No, not cabinet. Cabin and...
How much did this weekend cost you? That's what I want to know.
I'm comfortable.
Okay. Mr. Grown-up jobby job over here.
Yurts are circular.
Was it circular?
Yes, it was like it was round. It was round. It was beautiful. It was the nicest place I ever stayed. Okay. It was the nicest place I ever stayed.
A yurt.
Okay. It was beautiful. Beautiful. Up in the mountain, the thin mountain air.
Oh, it was good.
It was beautiful.
Did you wear wool?
I wore Crocs. We had a Japanese soaking tub outside the cabin. And
did you use it?
Yeah, as the snow was falling on the mountain.
Picturesque.
It was a beautiful time.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful time.
You take any other photos?
There's a disgusting photo of me in the Japanese soaking tub looking like Uncle Fester. All I need is the fucking light bulb in my mouth.
Let me see.
Where? Here you go. Actually, if you go back a few, I did a little room tour video.
You know what? You look very happy here.
Thanks.
And I think I think
fatherhood really suits me.
It does. I can tell. You're glowing. Your fatherhood
Thank
is glowing
you.
On you.
I do. I got to lose weight, though.
You will. Oh, look. Here's a picture of you and your kid sleeping.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Daddy's sleeping.
Daddy's sleeping.
We're both sleeping. Isn't that cute?
Oh, God. I'm probably going to get hate mail because I'm not one of those guys that.
Is this the tour?
Is that the tour?
There's
the missus there's the with missus. Mom.
There's her freaking out on the couch.
Okay.
Here it is. Here's the tour.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful.
It is really pretty.
It's actually like two. It was two rounds with connecting. That's just a little day bed, a little sleepy
bed. So you just
bed.
Hang out there.
Yeah. That's where Jen would go to sleep in the night when my snoring was keeping her up.
Of course, because you snore. This looks like a nice place to read a book.
Oh, I read... I read a whole book.
You read a whole book?
I read the screen book.
What a grown-up.
Yeah, enjoy it. And it was clean. You know, my OCD. It was... These yurts are very new.
Yeah, because I don't like to stay in Airbnbs because I don't trust the cleanliness.
You gotta find a place that's new.
I gotta go to a yurt.
You gotta go to a yurt.
I gotta go to a yurt.
Look how... I mean, it's all white and, like, light.
No, it's great. How is the grout on the bathroom?
It was fine.
Then I gotta yurt it up.
Dude... I bring my own blankets.
I know you do.
I have my own blankets and pillows.
Yeah, we're the same person.
Yeah, like I don't. Mattresses freak me out, and I was totally comfortable in there.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's put this sucker to bed. John Candy, what a mensch.
What a mensch. What a mensch.
If it only he'd lived longer.
I would have loved to have seen that movie with Sylvester Stallone.
I would have loved to have seen his, like, dramatic shit. He would have been just like Robin Williams.
You think he wouldn't have won an Academy Award?
Yes. I think he had the ability. I think he's good enough that he could have.
Yeah, I agree. It just was the right role.
Sure.
And I think he probably, as he got into his, like, late 40s, going into his 50s,
yeah.
I think he would have found that role.
Yeah.
I think he would have aged into them.
Yes, yes.
Because Robin Williams aged into it.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
shame.
Well, on that note, on that dour note.
Yeah, we ended the documentary. We ended this episode like the documentary. Sad.
Yeah.
Sad.
This is PCMC Pop Culture Man Children. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I was joined today by my good friend and yours, Mr. Emilio James Sparks.
Hi, I'm not a dad, guys, by the way.
Not a dad. Well, you know, you can be.
I'm going to adopt one.
Yeah, you can adopt dogs. In fact, people would rather you do that.
I mean, adopt, not shop. I'm always with that. But yeah. RIP, my girl Kat, she would always tell me all the time, if you're going to get a dog, adopt, not shop.
You know, since you brought that up, I was going to
Could you?
Our friend Kat, who was on the show, she was on the Deadpool episode. She was on the VHS Memories episode. She passed away. And I was going to re-release the Deadpool episode.
Could you?
We talked so... pleasantly about Ryan Reynolds. I was like, ah,
but you could do a little
aged well.
But you could do a little.
I ended up not wanting to because I felt like, I don't know, I didn't want any weird like stolen valor. Like I didn't know her that well. But I'm glad let's say here RIP Kat. Because she was in a lot of early episodes.
I loved
her. She was on your show. She was really good. She was good.
I loved her. She was my I was her Silent Bob, she used to say. And she was my Jason Mewes. There was just a you want to talk about a light on a person. There was just a light, but then it was a heavy sadness. It's funny that you say
like, she lived with pain. She had endometriosis.
Yeah. And but then it was just like this sadness attached to her as well. It's funny that we talk about John Candy because they kind of had like similar parallels in regards to anxiety and panic attacks.
Yeah.
But yeah, what a beautiful light that was extinguished too early.
Yeah.
So I love you.
We also talked about Joe. This is the one where we get the Peabody. We end every episode by saying,
"Go night night."
No, what is it?
Go night night.
Go bye bye.
I'm leaving that in.
That's staying in. See what happens? See how he big times you?
Well, see, I did the whole
thing.
He
doesn't even remember.
I was doing the whole, like, puppet circumstances, how The Rock would say, if you smell how The Rock is cooking. Did you see the body language that
no
I was
one
doing?
Saw it because this is an audio medium, sir.
I was doing it for you. And if we actually had video,
no.
They would have seen it.
Go bye-bye.
Go bye-bye.